The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Aspect of a huge coaching change, just a little bit off. It is the Chuck Oliver Show on a Friday. Appreciate everybody coming here for your college football conversation. Heath Klein sitting in yesterday. It was a wonderful show. I know that. And I was at Harris Cherokee and enjoying the first day of the tournament. So just a wonderful time up there. And back in studio today. When I say we may have gotten one part of a giant coaching change wrong, well, it was a huge coaching change. When you have Chip Kelly leave UCLA, head CBUS, and now he gets to just call plays, that's about as beneficial for Ohio State or any program I was going to get a play caller and a guy with that experience and all of that other stuff. We all know the reason we like Chip Kelly calling plays. The fact that it was the pivot from Bill O'Brien is just a whole nother layer to the onion. But there's a chance that part of the motivation on Chip Kelly's part, because remember, he got whacked at UCLA. He left. And it wasn't just, well, I'm a head coach at, where was Dan Enos? Central Michigan. Like, way back in the day, he was a head coach in the MAC. He wanted to be a coordinator in the SEC. Depending on what your measuring stick is, I was like, no, I get that. Being a head coach, that's kind of the thing. That's what you want to do. But you think you prove it at Central Michigan, and you take the route that, like, Butch and Brian Kelly did and keep going upward as a head coach. And he just, like, vaulted ahead. He skipped the Cincinnati stop, for instance, to the SEC, but still as a coordinator. So there were different routes, but we didn't see head coaches at places like UCLA quit to go be coordinators in college, plumb as the job with the Buckeyes is. We saw a guy at a place like BC that wasn't in the Cool Kids Club. And by that, I mean BC, history, heritage, what they can do. All of that, we know they're like really having to kind of shoulder against that ceiling. But the head coach there didn't even leave for, he left for the pros. You're like, all right, well, maybe. Maybe he just wants to go palms up on all this stuff. I quit. I'm gone. No more name, image, likeness for me. But with Chip Kelly, all the stuff that we know is true about the situation in general, head coach at a program in Power Five, for instance, or certainly Group of Five, and even outside of that to trickle down, we know what that situation is. We thought we knew about Chip Kelly's situation. And we wanted to put something on there that I think may have been a little misplaced. That Chip Kelly, part of this is Chip Kelly is figuring he's going to get fired anyway. There has been dissatisfaction with the way these seasons have been turning out. That's a big difference between we wish we were winning more and we're going to move on the football coach right now. And the reason I say right now is because if you look at Chip Kelly, he's had success enough after taking over something that was just kind of floating in the water with Jim Mora. Took him a minute, and then the offense started to hum a little bit, and it never really reached the heights you wanted, but they had kind of leveled out to 8 wins, 9 wins, 8 wins, and it was kind of good. Like, at UCLA, does that sound like where the Bruins are, we're dissatisfied. No, they haven't had the most recent success that makes them dissatisfied with eight wins. But we decided to interject, and Chip Kelly could have got fired anyway. No, I really don't believe so. Reason I say that is because there's a giant element that I want to say through no fault of an individual. It's sort of like human nature, especially when a lot of humans are involved and their employment is kind of on the line if they get it wrong. So if my employment is on the line, if I get it wrong, and not doing anything guarantees I get to hang around, well, why don't we just go with status quo? Folks, what I'm talking about is Chip Kelly wasn't getting fired because with the Bruins' move to the Big Ten, the revenue for a Pac-12 school was going to drop from about $25 million a season down to about $12 million a season, guaranteed, that Kliavkoff swore if the Apple streaming numbers hit benchmarks, then we may see $30 million in a few years. And by the way, if it's at $12 million for each of the next 2 years, y'all are all scot-free, can leave. And Colorado's like, well, how about we leave now because we're guaranteed 30 or 31 or 32 from the Big 12 today. And we have no exit fee, right? We have no period. We can give you 30 days notice in this window. That's why all this happened so rapidly, is the Pac-12 kept putting off its presentation of what the next media rights deal was going to be. They got an offer of 30, turned it down, said, I bet we can get 50. Next offer that came was $12 million a year from Apple Streaming with, if you hit benchmarks and in 2 years we're revisited and it could be as much as 30. Big 12's like, we'll give that right now. Colorado's like, out. So all these programs that skedaddle to the Big 12, they're sitting at about $30 million a year. When UCLA, USC, and the two schools up in north, Oregon and Washington, when they get to their full shares in the Big 10, they'll be making in the upwards of $90 to $100 million a year in media rights from the conference. Do you know why Chip Kelly wasn't going to get fired based on those numbers? Because the hunger has been removed at UCLA. And this is not just a philosophical thing or me predicting the future or trying to give you insight into something that no one can really prove, because UCLA is in the Big Ten now and Chip Kelly did choose to leave. So we don't know what would have happened. But him getting fired, folks, it's not the climate anymore. Leadership within college athletics at a lot of places, it's not as hungry as it was, and it doesn't have to be, and for one simple reason, the money's right. And when the money's right, that means status quo, we all stay employed. All right, well, the money's right. Let's just keep rolling along. So Chip Kelly, eight wins over the past 3 years, he didn't get fired. They would have been happy enough to keep him. And if you want to talk about Chip Kelly and the absence, you can look at it and see all the markers. If you want a specific case that's way more than just speculation, y'all remember Ralph Friedgen? Ralph Friedgen got fired as Maryland head coach, essentially for not winning the conference. Part of the reason that Ralph Friedgen got fired after season number 10 at Maryland is because he had won the ACC as head coach. And then when he went 8-5, had a 2-10 season that was a stinker, rebounded to go 9-4, finished as a ranked team, and got ACC Coach of the Year, and they fired him. Folks, Maryland was hungry in 2010. Now, they were in error. In that, they handed over to Randy Edsall, and it was a disastrous decision. But do you know what Maryland was? Leadership within Maryland athletics Do you know what they were? Brother, they were hungry. And when I say they fired, it wasn't just they fired their head coach who just won 9 games. It wasn't they fired their head coach who had won an ACC title. They fired a head coach who was a starting offensive lineman on a football team 30 years earlier. Fired him. There was something, and I don't want to put this like the wrong thing on there, but I'm trying to there was something Ralph Regan in his letter jacket. Like, he might have thrown it away, or I don't know. Maybe put it in a trunk in the attic or something. But, like, there was something, like, we heard about him and his letter jacket after they fired him. Now, I believe that the time has passed and the kiss on the cheek. I think all that has happened now. But understand, the point is that with Ralph Regan, a guy that was an OG at Maryland, and for what it's worth, Maryland wasn't so really in the we win the ACC business, except when Ralph Regan was the OC for Bobby Ross, and they did it 3 straight years in the early 80s. His first, like, really big, he'd gone to the Citadel, he coached a couple of places. He went to Maryland as OC for Bobby Ross. Bam, bam, bam. And then they were both gone, and I'm just telling you the timeline. They weren't really in that ACC business anymore, and Clemson was on probation. So that all happened. And then he comes back as head coach. He'd gone down to Georgia Tech, spun gold with George O'Leary, done stuff with Joe Hamilton, helped Joe win the Heisman. Ron Dane got it, but Joe Hamilton won it. And Maryland was like, Ralph, come home. Ralph came home, and for the first time since he was OC there, whammo! Turtles are ACC champs. Even better than that, they went 10-2, went to the Orange Bowl. Next season, won 11 games, won 10 again. All the way down 2010, 9-4 ACC Coach of the Year, won the bowl game, fired. Why? Well, you didn't win the conference. The reason I bring up all that, anybody think Mike Locksley's on the verge of getting fired if he doesn't win the conference? Because Maryland, again, I'm just giving you the bottom line, folks. Maryland athletics and Maryland, like, university leadership, hungry back in 2010. Even hungrier a couple of years later when Maryland set in motion all this stuff with the FSU sued the conference and now Clemson's suing it. North Carolina's like, we're the real joy here. All of that, do we realize that phrase, grant of rights, all of that was the ACC's response to Maryland leaving? $50 million. Maryland's like, how much? Yeah, we'll get you a figure. We don't want to pay 50, and so let's wrangle and negotiate and all that. But the $50 million, folks, didn't slow them down at all. They were like, yeah, we're going to the new conference. If it winds up we lose and you sue us in court and we owe the full 50, well, that's worst case anyway, but we're leaving right here, right now. Well, you owe us $50 million. Well, we're not paying that. And they knew privately, well, maybe we have to, but whatever. We're getting out of town right now. Big Ten, this thing looks like it might be too good to pass up. Charter member tipped. Founding member of the ACC tipped. Why? Hungry. Do you think leadership at the University of Maryland or within the Terrapins Athletic Department, do you think they're hungry right now? Mike Locksley's gone. 3 wins, 2 wins, 7 wins, 8 wins, 8 wins. I like Mike Locksley. But this looks like it could be a 7 or 8 win program in a lot of seasons. Are they hungry? UCLA's not hungry. That's not where they sit. Bob Toledo, if you even remember that name, he was a good coach. He had them in position to play for a national championship maybe in 98, and then it kind of flew off the rails. There was a Miami something I'm trying to remember. But Bob Toledo got whacked a few. He went 10-2, played UCLA in the Rose Bowl. Scratch your noggin. When was the last time I saw that? Well, you haven't. A few seasons later, 8-5, and they're like, yeah, you're fired, Bob. You know why? Hungry. They wanted more. When the money works, and for Maryland, they're full members. They're getting broke off with 100% of the share. they're at that like $90 million a year thing. When the money is so right that everybody in charge can kind of look around and say, if we don't do anything different, we're good. Folks, it's just a different day right now. So that one thing about UCLA, they weren't going to fire Chip Kelly. It was good enough that everybody could stay employed, and the money coming in is going to be so right that that would have been the case. All right, we're going to take a break, jump into it next.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
It's a Friday on Chuck Oliver Show, and we are talking college football. A conference has achieved a balance that most commissioners and TV execs can only dream about. If you will look at the Big 12 for the approaching season, the title of the it means little, believe me. The verbiage at the top of the page, the Big 12, there are 16 teams in the Big 12. There are 18 this year in the Big 10, I believe. It was snappy to say for a few seasons when Penn State joined. The idea, it was a nice idea. Penn State had been a monster as an independent for a while. And then they joined, I want to say, in 93 or 4. And everybody thought, this is nice. We added a big and welcome, and now you've got to play with the big boys. No more like scheduling layups. And then they won the thing and went out to the Rose Bowl. Everybody was like, wait a minute, suddenly my Rose Bowl looks way different. This wasn't supposed to happen. That was the precursor of college football conference expansion and realignment, was Penn State. They were that first wave going to the Big Ten, and they actually achieved success. And they had, an undefeated season, maybe? Maybe I think it was a Kerry Collins season, I want to say. And they went out there and played the Ducks, who everybody's looking around going, when did the Rose Bowl become Oregon and Penn State? Well, it was the Big Ten plus Penn. And now, I mean, what are you going to say? This is the Big Ten plus Penn and UCLA and Washington and eventually Oregon and then also USC. Like, you can't do it. So you call it whatever it is. And in pro sports, I mean, we had the Atlanta Braves were in the National League West. It doesn't matter. It's just a word. So the 16-member Big 12 will play this year. And I point out the number of teams there to drive home the real point that even the Big 12, if there were truth in advertising, it would be impressive enough. In the Big 12 that contains 16 college football programs, all 16 programs can think they are a playoff caliber program every single summer. That's not true in the two conferences where we know they're going to gobble up most of the bids. In a 12-team playoff, which may only last 2 years, but that's what we'll do. We'll deal with. In the 12-team era, I'm guessing half. Bare minimum of five, I think six. Half of the slots will go to SEC and Big Ten teams. Remember the provisions. There are no protected conferences. There are no guaranteed. There are no conferences that are guaranteed to get bids. It's all wide open. However, there's also no cap. SEC is like, yeah, we don't need a guarantee that our champion will go. AAC was like, huh, what, huh? Mountain West was like, no, we like that, actually. So the SEC's Big Ten is like, nah, we'll leave it wide open, but no cap either. So in this 12-team era, even with it, I say six, could be more, of the bids going to those two conferences, and the ACC will be beating the table and, you know, whoever else. And so you look at the Big 12. And it would be a reasonable, like, not unusual year that two Big 12 teams make the playoffs. There may be years that three do. Folks, if you look at the roster of programs, not teams from this past year, but the roster of programs, and include Kansas right now, who's not only spending on a coach, but they're spending on facilities like $400 million. That's a lot of money. They have achieved a balance. When I say conference commissioners and network executives, they only dream of this stuff. You have not a 12-team conference, which the title would suggest. You have 16 teams in that conference, and every single fan base, every single marketing department, because that's what it is on campus, every single coaching staff, everybody in the league, every one of those teams, and all their fans, which means TV audiences, they can truly look at the state of their program on about a rolling two-year basis and go, yeah, we're a playoff caliber team. Not everybody in the SEC does that, even in an expanded era where you're going to get most of the bids. That's just not how it is. And in the ACC, they're going to be scrapping for more representation than just, now, what is it? We get the four highest seeded conference champs get a bye, right? Uh-huh. And your conference champion may not be included in that. All right, well, what about if that's the case? Well, we only give the next highest ranked conference champion. So there'll be five spots that are reserved for conference champions. Four highest, they get byes. So let's see where you rank. And then we'll send the other bids wherever we send the other bids. Look at the Big 12. Start with the Arizona schools if you want to. I would say that they are actually going to play down a little bit, whereas Cincinnati clearly, and even I'll say UCF, BYU to some extent, they all had to kind of inflate up their roster over the past season. Going from either their previous conference status, affiliation, whatever they were, into the Big 12 last year. I talked about this. The bottom five teams were Baylor and the four new teams. So it's the same thing. Arizona State come in with a little bit of an advantage at that case.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
When you buy a used car, don't be taken for a ride. Get Ford Blue Advantage certified at Wade Ford, Atlanta's headquarters for factory-certified pre-owned vehicles. Go to wadeford.com. There you'll find a great selection of Ford Blue Advantage certified used cars, trucks, and SUVs. With Blue certified, nearly all makes and all models are in stock now. You'll find something perfect for just about any budget. Buy with confidence at the Wade Ford factory-certified used car outlet at wadeford.com. Wade Ford, we are Atlanta's Ford dealer.
Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
So, Florida State, they got spring practice like everybody else, and we're going to get some eyeballs on DJU. But before we do that, I've been, as we bounce around with our Truist reporters for different campuses and programs, we've been handling a little old business. And it's I'm talking about players who are now alumni of the program, leaving and heading to the NFL, and just getting a little bit of a nod towards these guys about a month now in front of the draft. We're going to talk about Florida State and spring practice, but I want to ask about two departing Seminoles in particular. Good friend of ours, War Chan. He's the managing editor there. It's Ira Schoffel. Ira, welcome back, friend. How are you?
I'm great, Chuck. Thanks for having me.
I want to start with two guys who will be in the NFL getting game checks. Jared Verse, and I want to ask you, like, Dallas Turner, he's got the dog in him. And maybe we look at, you know, a targeting penalty and an ejection or whatever, and we think, oh, well, he's got a dog in him. Does Jared Verse have that? Is he just this mean, nasty guy that gets his rocks off splattering quarterbacks? Because Dallas Turner, that seems to be the separator in a lot of, like, when we talk about it in the media with fans, that's a separator. Does Jared Verse have that?
I think he does. He's definitely two different types of people, like on the field and off the field. If you talk to him off the field, he is personable, always smiling, gregarious. But, yeah, practice, I'll tell you this. His first season at Florida State, two years ago, in preseason camp, I had heard that several of the offensive linemen were planning to jump him and beat his butt. Because he was driving them crazy. Not only is he good, but he wouldn't shut up, and he's kind of just plays with that edge. And the offensive line were sick of him, but then they saw him against LSU in that season opener, and they realized, okay, this guy's for real. We need to keep him happy. So yeah, man, on the field he could be a menace, but off the field he's got a great personality.
All right, Keon Coleman, man, he showed up. I was like, this is going to work. Like, this looks too right. And then it did work, and almost from the outset. Is he fast enough to be an impact NFL receiver? Because that's what everybody goes to.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be the question. You know, he obviously is not a blazer. But he's got really good size, great ball skills, very good leaping ability, and he's a smart receiver. Like, that was one thing you could see in practice is how much attention he put into, you know, his hand placement, things he did to try to get separation from receivers. And the other thing I think you got to remember is, you know, he had the 3 touchdowns against LSU early last season and had a couple of big games, had some amazing individual catches, but he also was dealing with an injury for most of the season. It was never announced, but I found out if it was a knee contusion. It wasn't like a structural damage, but he was dealing with something that was slowing him down to where he really didn't practice much as the season went on and just played on Saturdays. So I think if he stays healthy, I think he'll look even better than he did when he was at Florida State.
Okay, well, let's start on the field. We'll get to a lawsuit at some point, I'm sure. But on the field, this is strange because Florida State got done wrong. I mean, they did everything, and that's my opinion, and Kirk Herbstreit would say, no, Bama was better. whatever. They're supposed to be, though, regardless of how we feel about that, they're supposed to be like this anger, this chip, this lingering effect, bruising in the program. I don't know. I haven't heard a lot of that. Is that just because I'm not local, or is it just because it's 2024, dude? We change over everything from season to season.
We were all curious about that. I was curious about that. Even people in the program I talked to after all the guys opted out of the Orange Bowl and they ended up getting destroyed by Georgia, you know, there were questions about could they get back the same, you know, mentality in the program that they had during the 13-0 season. And there were some questions about it because, you know, again, that didn't no matter how you felt about it and whatever, you can be on the sides of players who opt out of bowls or you're not, whatever. It obviously didn't look good for Florida State to have all those guys opt out of the game. But it sounds like from very quickly right after that, and since that point, they've done a really good job of kind of recapturing what they had. And the new guys they brought in 14 transfers this spring. And almost all of them are from really high-level programs. You brought in 5 guys from Alabama, Marvin Jones Jr. from Georgia, Jalen Brown from LSU. You brought in guys from really good programs, and they fit in really well. So I don't think that's going to be a problem going forward, but it's something we were all kind of watching after that bowl game.
All right, well, let's talk about the transition to DJU. Practices started. What are the early returns? I mean, the guy started 40 games, and so there's like a lot of tape on him, so it's not a mystery, but what's the early feel on him?
You know, he's only been here for 2 days. Well, you know, I guess the biggest early feeling is that he's a really impressive young man. I think people that covered him at Clemson would say the same thing, or the people at Oregon State. He's just really sharp, personable. He's a guy you'd like to see as the face of your program. When it comes to the play on the field, you know, we're going to have to see. Florida State's had 2 practices. He's looked good in terms of throwing the deep ball. He's had some really impressive deep ball throws. And he's had some, just kind of a little bit of mixed returns with some of the underneath stuff and mid-range passing. But, you know, you also got to remember they're working in a whole lot of new receivers. You brought up Keon Coleman, but their top 3 receivers last year were Keon Coleman, Johnny Wilson, Jaheim Bell, and all 3 of them are actually working out at FSU's Pro Day right now. And so, they're rebuilding that receiving core. They brought in a bunch of transfers. He's a new player. So I think that's going to evolve over time. But you could see the arm. I mean, he is – you see why he was the number one quarterback coming out of country. The ball just zips out of his hands with no effort. It's just the question is going to be how quickly he picks up Norvell's offense. And also, if he can improve some of his accuracy. He's just not been a super accurate thrower. And in these first 2 days, you've seen some of that. He's made some beautiful throws, but then missed some routine throws.
So Malik Benson was a guy that a year ago, people in Tuscaloosa was like, oh boy, he could be the next one, that kind of freaky, different guy that you don't want to get too close to because if you miss him, it's a touchdown. And then it just didn't happen. And it can be a lot of things. It can be injury. It can be depth chart traffic. It can be whatever. Tell me what the feel about Malik Benson could be, because I've seen him like in little tiny like teacups of burst. You're like, okay, I see it.
Yeah, if you watch his if you watch his junior college film, it's electric. He's probably been the most impressive of the 14 new transfers, I would say, both in their offseason workout program, just in terms of how athletic he is, how hard he works. He's one of those guys, the gym rat kind of guy. He's the first one on campus in the morning, the last one to leave at night, can't get enough film room, but just really a professional approach. And look, I mean, he admits, he's like, look, I've got 1 year left, I've got to get it done this season. So it's not surprising he has that mentality, but he's impressed in that way. And then in the first two practices, he's definitely been their best receiver. I mean, he does have that top end speed like you said, but he's also seems to be a really good route runner, has very good hands. I don't know why he didn't catch more passes at Alabama. I think one theory that FSU fans are hoping is that, their passing game was not very good. And once they decided to really focus on the running game and their quarterback running game, that, him being their third receiver, it just didn't get to him. But based on the first couple of practices, he definitely looks like the guy that was the number one junior college player in the country 2 years ago.
So sometimes receivers, these are both compliments, they can be willowy and bendy. Destin Hill, if somebody just heard that name, is he that kid from New Orleans from like 10 years ago? No, it was like 3 years ago. He's on campus. He's in the two deep. What's the future with Destin Hill?
He looks really good. And he's a guy that, when he got on campus last year, like you said, he'd been out of football for 2 years. A lot of people didn't know if he would be able to contribute last year. He did. And probably would have contributed more. He ended up starting in the slot a couple games, and he probably would have been the guy, one of the top receivers on the team, but he kind of dealt with an injury during the year, I think a hamstring or an ankle, and he's looked very good in camp so far. I would say he and Malik Benson have been the two best receivers so far. He has got really high-level speed, and that's really – he kind of represents the difference of this receiving core. Like you said, Keon and Johnny Wilson, had a great size. These guys, Malik Benson, Destin Hill, Jalen Brown, who they brought in from LSU, these are guys that are not quite as big, the 6'1", 6'2 range, but they can really fly. And I think Destin Hill's got a chance to have a really good year.
Yeah, I'd seen the comment specifically from Coach Norvell. And given Destin Hill's, path, this kind of stuck out. He says he has the confidence of year two. Year two there in the car. I was like, well, good for Destin if he's, pointing north and doing that. Well, tell me how a guy like Ja'Kai Douglas is responding.
Ja'Kai Douglas has looked really good. And he came on late last year, especially, he had a really nice game in the bowl game. He really became kind of a big part of their offense when some of the other receivers were either injured or not available. And he's been in the program 4 years. He's a guy that they can play him everywhere. He can play in the slot. He can actually play out wide, even though he's not a big guy. He also can play some running back. And, something that I think FSU fans should be really excited about, it's a guy under the radar. His brother, Jalen Lucas, who returned several kickoffs for touchdowns at Indiana, he transferred in. And they have a different last name, but they're brothers. And he has been really impressive. He's listed as a running back, but I could see him as a screen pass guy, maybe even in the slot sometimes, and obviously in special teams. But those two guys, Ja'Kai Douglas and Jalen Lucas, are not two of the bigger dudes on the team, but they can both flat out fly.
Who am I remembering? Was it Skeeter? Who was the return man? Was Whitfield wasn't the biggest kid in the world, but
Kermit Whitfield, yeah.
Kermit Whitfield, that's right. I've always said, Ira, every roster, you can't fill it up with these guys, but there's a scholarship or two for a Brandon James or a Jeff Demps or an Ace Sanders, isn't there?
Oh, 100%. And Norvell really puts a lot of emphasis on special teams. Most coaches do. in this era. It's not like the old days when coaches would just put, you know, some walk-ons or backups on special teams. Now everybody puts a lot of their best players. But Norvell values it greatly. They had a couple kickoff returns for touchdowns last year. Trey Benson had one.
Yep.
Deuce Spann had one. And Jalen Lucas, I mean, he is – you got to see it in person, man. The kid can really run.
Last thing I want to ask you about, I'll give Norvell credit. He's got a reputation, you know, Jermaine Johnson, what it's earned about he can hit that portal and you can go to Tallahassee and vault into the draft. All that's great. He also is working the high schools. How's the on-campus recruiting been?
It's getting better. You know, the last year was the first year really they had a great proof of concept to sell, you know, coming off of the 10-3 season, and they backed it up with 13-0. And so, you know, they had about a top 10 class. It looked like it was going to be a little bit higher, but they got beat on a couple of guys that had actually been committed to them. One flips to Georgia and another one flips to Miami. So they lost out on some guys at the end, five-star type talent. But they're already, you know, in really good shape right now for this coming class. They've got a huge recruiting weekend this weekend, actually. It's called their Legacy Weekend, and they're bringing in a bunch of four- and five-star kids. They also bring back a bunch of former players who are on campus this weekend also to try to impress some of those high school kids. But no, they're doing really well, and I don't see any reason that's not going to continue.
Ira, this is kind of open-ended. I'll let you go after this. But if FSU, with this lawsuit against the conference, if they get what they're hoping for, help me define that, because I actually wound up, I was like, what exactly do they want and when? Like, what year? Like, specifically, what does FSU want, and what is their timeline on this?
Well, what they want, I think we all know what they want. They want to be in one of those conferences that writes the big checks. So as the things stand right now, they want to be in the Big Ten or the SEC. In terms of the process to get there, I think, you know, obviously they would love to win a lawsuit to where the grant of rights is ruled that it isn't legal. It's not enforceable. But I think what they expect and what's most more likely is that maybe you get to a place where there's a negotiation. And now that Clemson is sued also, and North Carolina is starting to say some things that make you think that they might be interested in trying to get out. Now, you know, you have more leverage when it comes to a settlement. So, you know, at the top dollar amount, FSU has said that the ACC is going to want $500+ million for Florida State to leave. I think Florida State is trying to get that down as close as possible to $100 million. They'd love to get less, but if they could be somewhere in the 100+ range, I think they feel like they can make that back pretty quickly with a few years in one of those other two conferences if they can get in.
Yeah, that whole, ACC provision that you must sue us in Mecklenburg County, that may like back some people off in Tallahassee and Clemson. I don't think it matters at Chapel Hill. They're like, sure, we'll see you in Mecklenburg. That's fine. Works for us.
Right.
All right, brother. I appreciate the input. Thank you, Ira.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
Irish Oval, warchant.com. Yeah, you always want it in your own back. Everybody loves a home game. And so that's what the ACC would want, and that's supposed to kind of back off everybody. But it's different when it's so North Carolina, that's the ultimate boss move, is you don't have to do anything. No, I don't have to sue you. I'm letting these other two, and they'll drag everything out. They'll kind of, you know, beat the broom against the side of the house. And just knowing what the environment is could be enough. Now, maybe UNC wants to pounce as well. And they absolutely could. And, I mean, it's a smarty pants school. They got a bunch of attorneys, alumni, so they would be on it. But they may not have to, which, like I said, is the ultimate move there. All right, we will break. We will wrap up this hour one next.
To Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
I think our guys are feeling that right now, just the understanding of, man, how we're going to execute when we're tired. And so the first two practices, there's been plenty of that, but I love the fact that they've responded to everything we've asked them to do, and we'll keep getting better.
Jeff Labby. Mississippi State has had two practices. They started back on the 19th. They've got a game coming up when? A month from tomorrow, I guess, April 20th. So, but Jeff Labby, and I've mentioned when I was just doing a quick assessment, you know, after the national championship game, just a quick flyover of the conference. I was like, well, wait a minute. Because of the expectations, this, that, and the third, Mississippi State is the hardest job in the conference now. Because you actually are expected to win some. And you have in-state expectations beyond that. So at Vanderbilt, for instance, you don't. At Missouri, you really don't-ish. You're changing that. Good for you. But Missouri in the Big 12 did, and Missouri maybe in the old Big 8 maybe did. It was different in the SEC. They kind of were surprised, as a lot of other people were, that they've had that measure of success, at least early on, the two of the first 3 years they won the division. That wasn't supposed to happen. Mississippi State, it's a different sort of thing. Mississippi State, there are expectations. I mean, who's Missouri tied to? They said, you've got a rivalry with Arkansas. And they're like, oh, well, thanks for telling us. And Arkansas is like, we do. So it all was just kind of, there's nothing tied to it. You don't want to be awful, certainly. But expectations on Missouri football, is, y'all know what I'm, it's just not there. It's not the same. There's no, you have to win this game. Maybe you do need to, you used to need to beat Kansas. Well, not anymore. When I was mentioning earlier in the program, that the Big 12 has achieved a balance, and Mississippi State's one of these programs I'm talking about. The Big 12 has achieved a balance that conference commissioners and network executives would kill for. They have expanded, ballooned up to 16 teams, and all 16 are legitimate playoff caliber programs. Not just preparing for, say, the 24 season, and I say, well, look at this TCU squad, or look at Texas Tech, or look, no, Baylor, it was misleading last year. I'm not talking about any team in the conference. Hey, Arizona State, I think this year they're a playoff team. I'm saying the caliber of those programs, every one of those programs in the conference, all 16, because of all of the details around them, and the fact that maybe two of us are going to get a bid every year, maybe three in the right seat, but two is a reasonable. You look at the Big 12 and then 16 and how many in the, okay, yeah, so yeah, two. If you're looking at two bids a year and these are the other teams and programs and possibilities and everything else, yes, UCF and Cincinnati, every single year, BYU can look at this and West Virginia think maybe we can get in the playoffs and it be a real thing. The reason I bring that up after we were hearing with Jeff Lebby, Mississippi State can't. Kentucky, I was talking about Kentucky earlier. Kentucky can't. Kentucky's not of that ilk. If you go back and look at the last 20 seasons, now I'm going to talk, in a 12-team era, it changes everything. Changes a lot. It doesn't change it enough for you if you're Mississippi State. It changes it for a lot of programs. You're not one of them. Look at the last 20 football seasons in Starkville. You tell me how many of those teams, after their regular season, and if there was a conference championship, which there wasn't for Mississippi State over the last 20 years, if they're just after the regular season and whatever their appearance in Atlanta was, tell me over the last 20 years, how many Mississippi State teams would have made the playoffs? I'm going to tell you one, maybe two in the right season when you didn't actually have to win the bowl game to bump up the win total. You win eight in 2010, and so don't, well, a nine-win team would get in the playoffs. They won the ninth in the bowl game. 2015 won nine games. No, they won eight games. That's what I'm saying. Your regular season in Starkville, 8-4, you're not a playoff team. 10-2, you're a playoff team. So the 14 squad with Dak, that's one team over the last 20 years. In the Big 12, against the backdrop of what that conference will produce, and with at least one, maybe two, yeah, it's different. Look at Kentucky. Kentucky over the last 20 seasons? How many seasons for Kentucky football would after their regular season and whatever, then they haven't been to Atlanta either. Over the last 20 seasons, how many regular seasons would have concluded and Kentucky would have gotten a bid in a 12-team playoff? One, maybe two. Same thing. A 9-3 Kentucky team? That's bubble. That's last team in. That's first team out. And that's both of their best chances for two decades. And so all up and down the SEC, you look at programs where saying you're a playoff contender every year, no, there are just a lot more playoff teams. In the Big 12, really different environment. You can honestly pitch that, and it's not just marketing. It really is the case for every program there.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
When you buy a used car, don't be taken for a ride. Get Ford Blue Advantage certified at Wade Ford, Atlanta's headquarters for factory-certified pre-owned vehicles. Go to wadeford.com. There you'll find a great selection of Ford Blue Advantage certified used cars, trucks, and SUVs. With Blue certified, nearly all makes and all models are in stock now. You'll find something perfect for just about any budget. Buy with confidence at the Wade Ford factory-certified used car outlet at wadeford.com. Wade Ford, we are Atlanta's Ford dealer.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.